God almighty. Hello. The Rick Emerson Radio Show. Here's what I was going to say about the Zune. Before we got sidetracked by huge German women and their bizarre fetishistic porn. And Tim is totally right about that, too, that German women are huge. Tim was noting that those German women, what did you say when you lean against a German woman?
I mean, it's like leaning up against a big salami.
It's true.
Well, it happened to me when I was walking down the street in Hamburg. You know, these huge women come out of nowhere and sit down beside you, one on each side.
And you may be a gentleman caller, yes?
And then the bartender comes in, please take care of my friends.
Oh,
you American Visa MasterCard? And you have no idea what you walked into, but you have a clue.
You are such a charming man. You will live inside one of my folds.
All right. Anyway, so I was talking about the Microsoft Zune. Damn. Here's the thing about the Zune. The Zune, Microsoft, they are the kings of the almost. You know what I mean? Like Windows is almost as good as the Macintosh. And my Windows-based Palm almost works all day without having to be reset. And their products are almost bug-free. They almost got it right with Windows 95. You can almost wholeheartedly endorse a Windows product, but never all the way. Here's the thing with the Zune. The Zune, which they keep calling the iPod killer, it's going to do... It's not a wounder, it's not a nicker, a scratcher. It doesn't do anything like that. The Zune has some cool functionality. It looks a lot like the iPod, the interface a little bit like the iPod. But this is the difference between Apple and Microsoft. And don't get me wrong, I run Windows, I run Microsoft. They do a lot of things well. Here's some things they don't do well. They don't name things well, and they have no sense for what is stylish and what is not. I'll give that to Apple, that Apple is like the most stylish company in the history of business. Nobody would ever dispute that. You look at an iPod. It looks cool. It feels cool. It's intuitive. They name things correctly. This sounds really weird, but I was at a recording studio last weekend, and the guy was using Pro Tools on a Macintosh, and I swear to God, and Pro Tools, I mean, it's not like kiddie software. I mean, it's professional, serious recording software, and the guy's using Pro Tools, and he's doing some mixing, and all I can think about is that the buttons look like candy, and I want to lick the screen. I swear to God. I'm looking at the Macintosh buttons, and I'm like, those are the big, jolly, candy-like buttons that I wish to lick, because they're designed to be so aesthetically pleasing. Microsoft, on the other hand...
How does this relate to the Zune?
They have the Zune. Tell me what's wrong with this. The Zune has a great feature, and I mean this sincerely. It's a little MP3 player like an iPod. They have this great feature where if you are within, I think it's 10 feet of someone that has a Zune, you can beam a song to them. So if you have a Zune and I do, and I'm like, hey, I want you to hear whatever, this Crowded House song, bam. Guess what the feature's called?
Zoom?
Squirting. Swear to Christ.
It wouldn't be like a Zune Zoom?
They trademarked that. You look at it, it goes, the ability to squirt songs to your friends.
Hey, can I squirt some music your way?
That sounds like something new for a MySpace.
Exactly.
Communication.
Exactly. So there you go.
Squirting? You're making that up.
I am not. You go look at the Zune website, look at the Zune documentation. You will see that I am
squirt
correct.
Squirt songs to your friends.
I'm going to squirt some entertainment your way, Sarah Dillon.
That's the worst thing you've ever said to me.
I am going to squirt you 3.5 minutes of fun. I could go on, but I won't. So that's the difference between Microsoft and Macintosh.
Squirting?
That's it. Yeah, squirting. The difference is in the squirting. That is all you know and all you need know.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Top story, chiropractors are seeing more women lining up at their offices in large handbags are to blame. Apparently, some of these bags are large enough to carry shoes, and one bag designed by singer Beyonce Knowles may be a particular offender. Now, his advice for women is to remove some of the items from their bags and try switching shoulders. The American Chiropractic Association says a handbag should not weigh more than 10% of the carrier's weight.
Really, it seems like even that's excessive. I got this email, by the way. I am downtown. Just saw a homeless man with the signs that said, pigeon meat getting old. Spare enough for cheeseburger. That's fantastic. While I was in Seattle, I saw a guy holding a sign that said, father killed by ninjas. Please spare a dollar. I gave that man two. Here's Tim Riley.
Time for Democracy on the March.
Democracy on the March. Friday edition on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
America. Yeah.
A signing statement attached to postal legislation by the president last month may have opened the way for the government to open mail without a warrant. The White House denies any change in policy. Mm-hmm. The law requires government agents to get warrants to open first-class letters. But when he signed the Postal Reform Act, Bush added a statement saying that his administration would construe that provision in a manner consistent with maximum extent permissible with the need to conduct searches of extingent circumstances.
What that means...
What did I just say?
If Dick Cheney feels like he needs to peruse your Victoria's Secret catalog without asking, I believe he now has the right to do that.
The signing statement raises serious questions whether he is authorized opening mail contrary to the Constitution and to laws enacted by Congress, says the ACLU. What is the purpose of the signing statement if it isn't that? Well, apparently the ACLU said the group is planning to file a request for information on how this extension will be used and asked whether it has already been used to open mail.
Of course it has.
White House Press Secretary Tony Snow said there's nothing new in the signing statement.
There's nothing new in the signing statement.
There you go. There's a democracy on the march for a Friday.
One more here, and then we'll bring on Scott Daly from Film Fever Radio.
A woman who was arrested in jail for 3 weeks on drug charges that turned out to be four flower-filled condoms has settled a lawsuit against the city of Philly for $180,000. Janet H. Lee is a freshman at Moore College, and she was trying to take the condoms filled with flour to carry on bag to a flight at LAX. Airport screeners found the condoms, and authorities said an initial test showed they contained drugs. Well, the flower-filled condoms were a toy that freshmen at the women's college would squeeze to deal with exam stress.
Okay.
We used to do that when I was younger, not with condoms, but with balloons.
Okay, but I was going to say, why would you use condoms for that? They seem a little thin. It seems like the first time you give a condom a good squeeze, it's going to...
But you know,
treading into a dangerous area here.
You know how with balloons, how, like, the balloon has a shape?
Yes.
And then, like, when you put all the flour into the balloon, it ends up shaped like a balloon.
Yes?
That's all.
I don't understand.
I don't know what I'm trying to say.
Are you saying that this was it's a comical stress relief aid?
Could be.
Because it seems like you were squeezing a zucchini.
Yes.
All right.
It's like campus comedy with a K.
From the Cleveland Clinic. The thing that's disturbing about this that I think we just glossed over is the fact that when they tested these, is it condoms filled with flour?
Yeah.
And then she was in jail for 3 weeks because the test said that it was opium. And then later they discovered it was just flour.
Right.
So my question is, how is it that you test something that is flour and then the result comes back that it's opium? Presuming she's not a drug dealer, which doesn't sound like she is.
No.
How is it that you test flour and the machine says opium? That's a little disturbing. It says opium. It tested for what? For opium and what?
Let's see, they contain drugs.
Well, that doesn't even make any sense. Well, that makes me feel
full of confidence in our law enforcement. Well, she thought the toys were funny, so she packed them to show friends at home and enjoy a few laughs.
Okay. All right there. Ladies and gentlemen, we will return at the bottom of the hour to the Ministry of Truth. More ruminations on pornography from Europe. One final observation. You really are right that I think the thing about the Germans is, I don't mean to culturally stereotype, but I believe that all Germans are insane
and violent. I believe you signed up... You sent an email in saying that you wouldn't culturally stereotype.
I haven't read that yet.
It wasn't about the Germans, though.
No, there was nothing about Germans in there.
Germans are never soft-pedaled anyway.
No, it's true. No, who cares if you hurt the feelings of Germans? I think that they're just like a naturally aggressive people. I can say this, by the way, because I'm German. In your face. That's going to be my defense. That I think the Germans are just a naturally violent people. And so...
And your people killed my people on numerous occasions. But here we are working together, and I don't hold a grudge.
Let's sing a song. let's sing Ebony and Ivory. And I think that they can't really declare war on anybody anymore because we're not going to tolerate that. And so it just all comes out in their porn. You know what I mean? I think that's like, it's like Japan. I think that there's something about Hiroshima and radioactivity and Godzilla and tentacle porn. And it all has to do with, it's all interconnected somehow in ways that really only a shrink would know. So there you go. I think we're going to be done talking about German pornography for a while.
But it's so much fun.
We'll be. Tim Riley returns at the bottom of the hour. Let's see if I have any sound here. Let's see if I have a song here for blah, blah, blah. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson radio program. All right, call that good.
We built this Starbucks on high.
Scott Daly from FilmFeverRadio.com. Hello, sir. How are you?
I am doing very well.
It's been like 3 weeks since you've been here. 4 weeks.
Yeah, it has been a while. I have some very exciting David Lynch news. Sorry, Dylan.
Ooh.
Two pieces. Number one, his latest, Inland Empire, opens next Friday at Cinema 21. 3 hours of pure David Lynch magic.
Oh, my God. Yes. That's going to be so
yes.
awesome.
Yes. Yes. And number two, finally, season two, Twin Peaks. April 10th,
yeah!
DVD.
I thought it was already out. How is it that show's not out on DVD
already? Oh, it's out in the UK. They haven't had it here.
Season one has been out for a few years now, but for some reason they see a need to put out the entire series of Golden Girls, the entire series of What's Happening on DVD,
true.
But they don't put out season two of one of the best damn TV shows ever.
Except, and I have the whole thing on VHS, but
it's
I don't have...
It's all crappy. It's got like eight episodes on VHS that's like really thin tape, so it's all ugly. So yeah, season two DVD, Twin Peaks. Finally.
They did the same thing with, like St. Elsewhere, which is a really was a really important TV show. And then, you're right, it's just everything. You're watching, like, season after season of Hee-Haw come out on DVD.
I know.
And they just finally now put out one season of St. Elsewhere, and they're going to do one, like, every 9 months or something. Well, it's just agonizing.
The season one Twin Peaks DVD is a beautiful, beautiful set. And it's sitting on my shelf, and I want to watch it, but I want to do a marathon. I want to do all of them. And finally, we get to.
Oh, I will definitely come over for drunken commentary for Twin Peaks.
We may have to do that.
Okay.
And so what is the new David Lynch film?
It's called Inland Empire.
And it opens when and where?
It opens this
time. Note that my unbiased...
I know, I appreciate that,
despite Rick my feelings about David Lynch and his so-called films, that I am passing along, I am passing
that's
the information on to the people. I'm saying...
It's so-called.
You know what? People are free to go, they're free to not go. I'm not going to hold back information.
So what is this movie about?
No, it's about
it's
a
not
woman.
About anything.
It's about a woman...
Rick!
Sorry.
It's about a woman in trouble.
No.
Yes, that's the tagline.
I'm stunned.
Lynch has. A woman in trouble. Laura Dern is in it. Grace Zabriskie.
Yeah.
Laura Palmer's mother. Mm-hmm. Jeremy Irons is in it. Justin Theroux. Laura Dern plays a woman who's an actress in a film, and all kinds of parallel universes are happening at the same time.
That's the thing I love about David Lynch is that he keeps reusing the same actors over and over again.
Go to DavidLynch.com. Check out the trailer. Okay. It'll creep you out. I guarantee you. I'm so excited. It's getting rave reviews. It's like they're saying it's his best film ever.
That's because he is such an awesome filmmaker.
It's 3 hours, too. That's the best
three
thing.
Hours?
Oh, boy.
And also.
It's a Christmas miracle.
It played at Cannes. Rave reviews at Cannes. The studio says too long. Cut it down. Lynch said, F you. I'm not doing that. I'm distributing it myself. So he's doing his own thing with it.
Oh, that is so awesome.
So, yeah, next Friday, it opens at Cinema 21. We're very, very excited. Because on the website, there's a small schedule of when it's coming out and what places. And it said January 2007, Seattle, San Francisco, Austin, but nothing about Portland. And I was searching and found out at Cinema 21.
Fantastic.
Well, we should try and get David Lynch on the show.
All my wishes come true at once.
Do you realize... Oh, God.
That maybe I can have a three-hour colonoscopy afterward. That'd
you do that, I'll interview David Lynch.
Rick, we listen to you talk about cartoons for like 2 hours at a time.
Everybody likes cartoons.
You know what? Many people like David Lynch. Many people don't.
Yes, they do. Thank you.
Okay. Can all go and smoke clove cigarettes together.
You don't have to go with us to see Inland Empire.
I'll get a beret for you to wear.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I will give David Lynch credit for two things. I will give David Lynch credit for Blue Velvet, which is a pretty authentically good film.
That's the very...
I don't think it's as great as everybody does, but I think it's a good, solid film. I will give him credit for sustaining a career with a relatively small fan base and a relatively... and not a lot of box office success.
He does things his own way.
He does things... I'll give him that. I can say this for him. He does things his own way, and he did the hottest lesbian scene that I've ever seen in any film ever, 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 ever. That's what I can say. I can say lots against him. I won't, but I will say he is an auteur, and I mean that in the truest way. He does things his own way. He makes the films he wants to make, and he doesn't kowtow, and I can admire that.
For the longest time on his website, he had his daily weather report, where you click on the weather report, he's sitting in a coffee shop. Today's weather, 76 degrees and balmy. Every day you get a new weather report from Lynch.
So you gotta appreciate the crazy genius of that.
Okay.
Rick, I think that David Lynch does what you only dream to do, and that's why you don't like him.
Yes, exactly.
No, because he lives life his own way. He's bizarre and freaky and weird.
My dream is to make tedious, meandering, plotless films.
They are not...
Inland, Inland. Well, let's ignore him. Inland Empire was shot on a consumer grade digital video camera too.
So, oh, yeah.
Here's the thing about David Lynch. All kidding aside, the thing about David Lynch is that I watch his. Here's why I don't like David Lynch films. I watch David Lynch films and I just I really do flashback to high school and just feeling like I'm not cool enough to sit at the table. That's the thing. When I watch a David Lynch film, I'm just like, I am really just hip enough to be at this table.
But have you read interviews with him where he says he doesn't even understand half of the stuff that he does? He's not making some big valid point. He just kind of throws things together to kind of mess with
him. And he lets the viewer figure it out for themselves. He doesn't spoon feed you what's going on. There it is. All of his DVDs, if you have any of his DVDs, there's no chapters. He wants you to watch it as a book.
I don't see, and I don't want to start an argument about it because these arguments turn personal very quickly. I know it's true. No, seriously, Joni and I learned this. Joni made this statement one time. I didn't want to talk about it. I didn't want to see it because I'll just get angry even bringing it up, even thinking about it. No, because there's a book by Nick Hornby called A Long Way Down, which is not a great book. It's a good book. But there's a character who's a musician. And I don't remember the character's name now because the book didn't really stay with me all that much. But he made this one. Like all Nick Hornby books, there's one great, an authentically brilliant observation that he makes. Like, you know, Nick Hornby's all-time, like, if he were to die today, Nick Hornby sort of created the top five list as a music snob thing. And that's what, you know, that's what everybody will remember about Nick Hornby. He created top five. Well, out of Long Way Down, he has a great observation he makes. Actually, there's two great observations, which I will pass along. First is, he has a musician friend who was kind of in a band that they had, you know, limited success for a couple years, and then the band kind of didn't go anywhere else, and the band kind of broke up, and now they have to get regular straight jobs. And he makes a great observation where he says that being in a rock band is like college for sort of working class kids, for poor kids. You know, rich kids go to college or they backpack around London and they get great experiences for a few years and they live life and they get to be crazy before they have to go face the real world. And he's like, if you can't go to college, you go in a band. It's the same thing. You know, you bond and you have great friendships and you get to drink and, you know, sleep around and be crazy. And then eventually you got to grow up and get a real job. You know, so he said being in a rock band is college for kids who can't go to college. Great observation.
That's
number one.
Good, yeah.
Great observation number two is he's talking about how there is normal rage and then there is music rage. And music rage is like when you're talking to somebody that goes, oh, the Beatles suck. They're the most overrated band on earth. I wish the Beatles don't even matter. And he's like, music rage is like normal rage, except it's not solved by killing the person because they wouldn't suffer enough. You want them to die slowly, right, lots of pain. That's what music rage does to you. I know music rage.
Right.
You know that.
Yeah.
And movie rage is sort of the same.
This is why
I don't want to get into a whole thing about David Lynch. Because I do respect the fact that he makes movies his own way. He does that. But, man, Joni and I, God, we have just had some horrible... just knock down, drag out, horrible, like, way, it's so dumb, uglier fights than really are even warranted, just about some passing comment that she will make about a movie. And as a man who slagged Tombstone his first day on the air, you know what I'm talking about.
I do. So, I still love it down.
Anyway, I will also say that without David Lynch, I never would have read the diary of D.B. Cooper, of Agent Cooper. What is it called?
The autobiography.
Is it just called the autobiography?
The autobiography of Agent Dale.
There's that and the diary of Laura, the secret diary of Laura Palmer.
Which is a porn.
Which are two great books.
Yeah. Yeah,
they're two authentic, and I didn't even like Twin Peaks, but those are great books.
The Dale Cooper one, I just reread that, actually. The Dale Cooper one is so, it's so sad. It's heartbreaking.
Mm. Yeah,
it's so well written, though. It's great.
And
his daughter wrote the Laura Palmer diary.
Really?
Yeah.
I read those books. Oh, and David Lynch made The Straight Story.
Yes.
Which is a good movie. So
who would have thought that Lynch would produce a Disney-produced G-rated film that just makes you well up and cry like
a baby? Now, see, up until The Straight Story, see, here's the thing about David Lynch, and then we really should talk about other stuff, but I know you want to talk about best and worst films of the year in 2007, and we get some more from Tim. The thing about David Lynch is, and I know that it's not true because, again, he made The Straight Story, for the longest time, I just suspected he didn't really know what he was doing, and he was just screwing with us. Like, it was a whole lot of, you know, it was like a lot of, let's see if I can edit all this crap together and see if people pay to watch it, like Lost Highway.
Yeah.
You watch Lost Highway, and I'm like, this guy is just effing with me. There's no movie here. He just wanted to see if I would pay $7 for this. But again, you know, he did kind of prove me wrong. So
my favorite factoid about David Lynch is he was discovered by, do you know?
No.
Sarah, do you know who discovered David Lynch and who gave him
no idea.
Elephant Man?
Got nothing.
Mel Brooks.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Well, okay. Well, there you go. All right. We should probably take a break here. We'll do a couple quick headlines. You'll talk about, you'll wrap up 2006.
Yeah.
And then you'll talk about what's coming up in 2007.
Great year, my friend. We got some great stuff coming up this
year. All right. FilmFeverRadio.com. Scott Daly is here. Back after this with Tim Riley and more movie talk. Like us at 3, Don and Mike at 7. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970. Solid State Radio.
Holy diver, you've been down too long in the midnight sea. Oh, what's becoming of me?
Alright. Oh, was I? Oh, are they? Alright, hold on. That never gets old. Wait, hold on. And here we go.
And now a message from the President of the United States, George W. Bush.
Good morning. This week I'd like to report that we continue to be victorious in Iraq. In this far-off land, a brutal dictator once ruled. But then a great president freed the people. And now there are budding flowers, dancing children, and colorful festivals praising the kind president and his sensible policies.
Excuse me, Mr. President.
Why, it's former Secretary of State James Baker. I'm busy, Uncle Jim. I'm telling a story about flowers. Come back later.
Mr. President, the situation in Iraq is grave. We must change our policy.
But no, that's not
Did you read my Iraq study group report?
I read it. I mean, I skimmed it. Like, I put that in a drawer for safekeeping. Look, I don't have time for this. Where was
but,
I?
But, sir.
Iraq, wreaths of victory continue to be thrown at our troops as the people sing songs of praise.
Mr. President.
In fields of marshmallow candies bloom.
Now, sir, in the report, I lay out my proposals for a timetable for withdrawal.
I can't hear that.
Other very sensible.
And the people sing, la, 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 stay the course, la, 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 I can't hear you, la.
Sir, you've got to listen to me.
I don't believe.
The fate of the entire region and the security of these United States.
The security of the... Oh, that's a good idea. Security. I got an intruder in the Oval Office.
Mr. President, wait. Now, listen
yeah,
to me.
Come on, come sir. Sir. Come
listen.
With us.
Please do not rack. Sir. So, America was victorious. The troops and the Iraqi people lived together in harmony for happily ever after, and I got the medal for greatest president ever. The end. Good night and sleep tight.
A public service of The Onion, brought to you by weeklyradioaddress.com.
Fantastic. There you go. All right. It's 503-733-2970. In mere seconds, we will be joined by Tim Riley. We will visit the Ministry of Truth. It's 503-733-2970. And then you are going to wrap up. Well, we got the... Because we already did the 2006 wrap-up.
Right.
So we'll wrap up 2006 film-wise and talk about things coming up in 2007. Ladies and gentlemen, the official president, prophet, seer, and revelator of the Rick Emerson Show is Tim Riley.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Former Kip star Eric Estrada got into an expletive-laced shouting match with a man who called him Emilio Estevez.
I don't know why that's so funny.
This during the filming of a reality television program. Estrada, who was sworn in as a reserve officer last month for the new CBS show Armed and Famous, was in an ambulance with Randall R. Sims when the exchange unfolded Wednesday night. Meanwhile, officials in Australia have destroyed copies of a video showing crocodile hunter Steve Irwin's death.
Aww.
It was feared the film could fetch hundreds of thousands of pounds placed on the internet. And we know how he died. Footage has been the subject of widespread media interest and was wholly appropriate to take possible steps to ensure something. This is written in Australian.
His wife has still got a copy of this. It'll still come out someday. That's what matters.
Anyway, there's going to be a big snowstorm this weekend, so do be prepared. It could snow where you are.
You're all going to die.
Well, it's been revealed that the strikingly beautiful Dita Von Tress has filed for divorce from Marilyn Manson. The goth rocker, whose real name is Brian Warner, will be served with divorce papers today.
Now she's free to please Big Daddy Rick.
She's been with Manson for 7 years and was married to him for one. She moved out and filed for divorce just before Christmas. Estee Lauder, President John Dempsey, with whom Therese works. Oh, she's the face of the MAC makeup line, apparently. I didn't know Macintosh made makeup. Oh, maybe that's the big announcement. That's
squirt some makeup on your head.
Anyway, there's some type of MAC makeup, and this lady is a spokesman for it. Apparently, she's a glamour girl like they used to be in the 30s and 40s.
Just, okay. Let's do one more.
Okay. You can tell it's Friday.
Really, I think we peaked with the German porn thing. After that, that and the meet my midget and two big bouncers.
That is hard to beat.
What are you saying?
Well, Illinois Senator Barack Obama is back at work after some time off due to congressional recess, and it looks like he will soon have a major announcement to make. NBC reporter Marion Ahern reports that it looks like Obama will soon announce he is running for president. You must have a fire in the belly, said a professor. I don't know what that means. It's like heartburn? You cannot be a reelected candidate. Either you're in it or not in it. A political insider who has already committed to work for Obama said people should look for the senator to make his intentions known very soon. The reason for that, Obama needs to get his infrastructure in place. So apparently this is like fire in the belly. The New York Times reported that Senator Hillary Clinton views Obama as her biggest obstacle in her quest for the presidency, but she hasn't said she's running either, but believes he is inexperienced in government and foreign affairs.
And before you go, we have two things. Rick, this email says, being of German ancestry, I have to agree with you about Germans not being very touchable unless it's a chokehold. My parents have been married for 50 years, and my mother doesn't like to be touched by anybody, including my father. I have no idea how there are three children in the family. As for me, I've learned to enjoy being touched. I'll even accept a hug from a stranger or a cheap feel, whatever the case may be. Lisa, okay? And finally, now, we had a story earlier, this is one of the best stories of the week, about a Muslim who, I swear to God, bought a plot of land next to a pig farmer in Texas.
We had that earlier today, yes.
And we were noting that this is a television sitcom in the making, and we were asking for titles of said sitcom. We had The Fatwa and the Farmer. That was, I think, the best one so far. We now have these, here's some other ones. We have Allah in the Family. Chico and the Koran, which is fantastic.
That is good.
Eight Wives is Enough. Pimp My Turban, that's less funny. Hogs and Falafel, which is like a Kate and Ally kind of a thing. And finally, Pigs and Shiite. No, because, you know, he's a Shiite.
Yes.
Pigs and Shiite. Mm-hmm. Like a pig and pancake. But instead of a pancake, a Shiite. And a pig. And we're done. Ladies and gentlemen, newsman Tim Riley.
Woo! Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Have a good weekend.
Thank you.
It might snow where you are.
Fantastic. Tim Riley, ladies and gentlemen, at the CBS Radio News Desk. I got to be careful because I'm going to start doing...
You can't do it. And don't do it.
And I can't. The problem is, you hear that guy do George W. Bush,
and it's
tempting. You want to start... you got to resist.
I can't.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're here with Scott Daly, FilmFeverRadio.com. All right, so 2006, not a good year for
film.
Not
a good year for film.
No. Was it King Kong that came out last year? It seems like a million years ago already.
No, King Kong was late 05, Christmas time of 05.
Mm.
So, yeah, you know, I was trying to come up with a top 10 list for the year, and I really couldn't do it, so I had to narrow it down to a top 5 list. My five favorite films of 05.
Okay.
We'll start out with Little Miss Sunshine.
Which
if
I still haven't seen.
It's on DVD now.
I haven't seen
that
it
is
yet.
The cutest
by all
movie.
Means,
really?
It's cute. It's funny. It's sad.
It's smart.
It's
got it's Craig really, Kilborn, right? Got, or no, David Kinnear.
Greg Kinnear.
David Kilborn.
David Kinnear.
I don't even know what the hell I'm talking about. Greg Kinnear,
Greg
who
Kinnear.
I always confuse with Craig Kilborn, but Greg Kinnear.
Alan Arkin.
Yeah.
Toni Collette.
Yeah, pretty great.
Steve Carell.
Toni Collette. I love her.
I do too.
Yeah.
It's a great film. It's a great. And it just makes you. There's some scenes towards the end at a child's beauty pageant that just makes you want to vomit. It's amazing.
Well, what more ringing
but
endorsement?
It's such a great film.
Larson, she said it was really great.
Yeah,
she keeps telling me I got to see
it's
it.
It's really good. Next on my list would be V for Vendetta.
V for Vendetta. Was that 2006?
Yeah, that was early in the summer.
That's a fantastic film. Maybe the
just
film of the year for me.
So great. So great. Next would be The Departed. Which Martin Scorsese with DiCaprio and Jack Nicholson and Alec Baldwin, who's great. I love Alec Baldwin.
He's good.
He's so good.
The only problem with The Departed is, while I was talking about this during the break, my big problem is Jack Nicholson. I think that maybe is a generational thing because after The Joker, I have difficulty taking him seriously as a villain. He always seems like
I didn't have that problem.
When I think of The Departed, Nicholson is on the list, but the first thing I think of is Damon and DiCaprio.
Right.
And their performance and how well they played They weren't, you know, they were barely on screen together at the same time, but they played off each other so well. And it's Scorsese. And
well,
I'm sorry,
that's the thing is, any Scorsese film is better than almost anything else.
Yeah,
all
exactly.
That killing, though, my goodness.
Yeah, well, that's my other thing is at the end it was sort of like, I don't know how to wrap it up. I will kill everyone, and then it's over.
Well, that is so great about Scorsese is. You forget, really, maybe you don't forget, but you just are so in awe of how great his films are, and then they're just all of a sudden out of the blue, violent as hell.
Right.
It's like, oh, Lord.
No, it's true.
and he's so good at that, too.
And the thing is, and he's such a subtle, refined person, and you see, in real life, you see him interviewed, and he's a man of culture and taste. And
David Lynch is the same way.
Yeah, and then he makes these films where it's just like, it's like the most horrific violence, but somehow it's very stylized.
Yeah,
and,
very well done.
Last night I saw one of the goriest movies I've ever seen in my life. Have you, Scott Daly, seen The Descent?
Oh, no, no, no. Don't ruin nothing.
No.
The DVD is sitting on my coffee table right now, and I haven't seen it.
Okay.
And it's the unrated British version.
I'm not going to ruin anything for you, Rick. Yeah. Put your fingers down.
Yeah, calm down.
What I'm going to say, though, is I watched it with Lisa, and you know my friend Lisa, who's all about everything scary. Yeah. We screamed throughout the entire thing.
Yeah.
It was the scariest movie I've ever seen.
No, because, well, Aaron, and you know how I'm constantly complaining that horror is dead in America and blah, blah, blah. I skipped it in the theater because I knew the American version got cut all to hell. I went over to Aaron's on New Year's, and he's like, dude, The British Descent. And he handed it to me. I've got that and Rocky sitting on my dining room table right now, and we're going to watch those.
It is the bloodiest thing I've ever seen in my life.
My wife, the lovely Maxine, has never seen Rocky.
Lara's never seen Rocky. No, that's not. I take it back. She saw it once, like years and years ago.
Really?
She was like nine.
Never seen.
So, but I want her to see Rocky Balboa, so I'm making her watch the original Rocky again, and I want to hear the commentary and so forth. And then I got The Descent. It's like it's the unrated British version. And
strap in, man.
Ebert said that. Ebert was like, he's like, this movie will mess you up. He's like, this movie will reach inside and scramble your soul. So,
Next on my list is The Good Shepherd. I heard you talk about it over the weekend.
How
I thought
great
over the weekend
is that?
As well. Just a good one of those films where when it's over, you look at your watch and think, holy crap,
that's
3 hours
is gone. It doesn't feel like 3 hours.
No,
and
it's so well done.
You know,
and again,
I want to oversell it like the best thing ever, but God, it's a solid
film. It's great. Matt Damon, Alec Baldwin once again is in it. And one of the best moments in the film was the scene between Matt Damon and Joe Pesci.
Yeah, and I know the speech you're talking about.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
My favorite film of last year.
I'm hoping we're on the same page here.
My favorite film.
Yeah?
Clerks 2.
Oh, well, okay.
But why?
We're not on the same page. No, well, Clerks 2, a fine film.
You know what's great about Clerks 2 is why it was my number one film of last year? Because how he took a film like Clerks, you know, his first, you know, $5,000 film,
right.
And it just was huge. The fact that he went back and revisited and kind of brought everything together at the end.
It's weird because
it's it's vulgar, it's crude, it's hilarious. But it has a heart.
And it's kind of like a Rocky Balboa kind of thing, too, where he does what... I'll say that Clerks is way better than I thought it would be. I didn't think it was going to be good.
Yeah, I agree.
I thought it was going to tank and stuff.
I agree 100%. Which one were you thinking?
See, for me, the film of the year, I'm saying for me, very close race here, because number two, the second best film I would say is V for Vendetta. That would almost be the second best film of the year for me, because it was just so good. But the best film of the year for me is Brick. For me, Brick is like hands down the film of the year. I mean, it just blew.
I haven't seen it yet.
I know. I can't believe you don't like Lynch, and you're sitting here saying that you like Brick. That just seems
Brick
weird.
But Brick is a straight ahead, absolute. There's no surrealism. It's not. I mean, it's a very by the numbers black and white detective story. It's just
it looks
high school.
Outstanding.
There's nothing surreal about it. That's I think the problem is I'm too linear. I can't. It's my it's not you, it's me. It is my failing. I know this as a film viewer. I can't appreciate things that are abstract or surreal. I just don't have that ability. I'm too black and white. I know this about myself. I am too left-brained. And so that's why the things, as I've said before, the example I constantly give is, that's why to me, Jaws is and always will be much scarier than any ghost story. Because I don't believe in ghosts, and I can't convince myself to believe in them. But I believe in sharks.
Okay.
I believe in sharks, and I believe in serial killers. Those are scaring me. I can't... My brain will not allow me to be scared by things that I don't believe in, and I can't appreciate abstraction or surrealism. And I'm not saying that like I'm... It's just I can't change that
you
about
know what?
Me.
At least
I wish I could.
At least you can appreciate and notice that, because a lot of people, I just don't get it.
I mean, yeah.
There's no reason.
It is
what do you get about it?
I don't think I'm smart enough to appreciate things that aren't real, that aren't realistic. I can't...
So... Wait, but then what about movies? Like, for example, like something like The Descent, where it deals with something not quite supernatural, but something that is like a mutant strain of things. See, does that stuff scare you?
Yeah, because like it's the same reason like an Aliens. Mm-hmm. That like that scares me because that's a thing. Like, I can accept that that could exist, that that's a thing that could be real. But if it's like, well, I'm possessed by the devil, it just doesn't do anything for me.
So The Exorcist didn't scare you?
No, I mean, I can see it's I can get into it. It's a creepy film, but it can never affect me the way, you know, that something like that's why I'm such a fan of Glengarry Glen Ross, I think. It's guys in an office, you know? Mm-hmm. Clerks, dudes at a convenience store.
Right.
Jaws, big shark eats people.
Right.
Those are the films that affect me the most, and I wish that I could be more right-brained about it and appreciate films, because I know that there are a lot of films. I sound like I'm on my shrink. I know there's a lot of films and a lot of books and a lot of things that I miss out on because I can't be open-minded enough to appreciate them. Open-minded is the wrong word, but I can't. My brain doesn't work that
right.
way. I wish
sense.
I could.
That makes sense.
So, but that's why Brick was so great to me, because it was the juxtaposition of two things that had never been done before.
I need to borrow a little sheet of paper and a pen, because I'm writing that down. I'm putting it on my Netflix when we get home.
Brick, it is, to me, Brick is great, because Brick is, and it's like a Maltese Falcon kind of a thing. It's like a 1940s noir, like a Humphrey Bogart film, but set in a high school. And the weird thing about it is that by doing that, like, Brick feels, Brick to me is in many ways a more realistic depiction of what it's like to be in high school than like any teen film I've seen in the last 20 years. Because Brick,
and this is probably a generational thing too, because my high school wasn't like that, and it has the huge class separation that you've always talked about with like the skater punks and, you know, like all the different people in their own different quadrants of the school.
I don't think that it's that my high school was like the high school, and by the way, if you haven't seen Brick, I think, you know, you should see, just because it's interesting. I don't think it's that my high school was like that, but I think it's that, like, when you're in high school, when you're a teenager, everything, like, all your emotions and all the situations are amplified. Every breakup is the worst breakup that anybody has ever had.
Or any interaction you have with a jerk or...
Any
or
interaction with a principal is like a terrifying authority figure interaction. Any fight you have with a school bully is like a life and death situation where you think you're not going to make it out alive.
Right.
Any stress or scandal or any sort of drama that goes on in high school feels like the biggest, most insane, life-changing drama you have ever witnessed, and that's what Brick does. Brick takes all of those and makes those feel real to where it literally is a life and death situation.
That's hard to do.
It's like an externalization of teenage emotion. I know that sounds really pretentious, but that's what that movie
is. No, it's true, and that's really hard to capture that.
Yeah.
It's really hard to go back to those days, especially... teenagers today, you know, and how that's still...
That's the other great thing he does is it's timeless. You can't really tell when it takes place.
That's great.
But Brick, to me, is that's what it feels like to be a teenager. It doesn't... When you're a teenager, you don't think to yourself, well, I'm just a kid, and this'll pass, and I'll have a lot of experiences, and I'll look back on this, and it won't seem like... When you're a kid, you feel like an adult. You're like, this is real, I'm a grown-up, these are the things, because they are real to you. When you're a teenager, your experiences are life and death to you when you're 15, 16. Like, we talked to Chris, who has a lot of problems with his kid, who's not even a teenager yet. And clearly that's a kid who doesn't look at himself and go, I'm still a child. That kid is going through emotions that feel really adult and really crucial and life and death. And that's the great thing about that movie, is it captures that feeling. So
awesome.
But
very
V
good.
For Vendetta, though, is a very close second.
Yeah, man.
Because I've said this 100 times, that I cannot believe that that movie was allowed to be released in this country.
In today's society?
I can't believe that.
In today's political world, I'm amazed they got away with it.
I can't believe that the government and a studio didn't exert... I can't believe that the government didn't exert pressure on the studio to stop V for Vendetta from coming out. Can you imagine what it was like to be a Brit, whatever they're called, an English person, to live in Britain to have that movie come out? I wish I knew somebody who lived in Britain so I could ask them what it was like to see that movie in Britain.
Yeah.
And that'd be like a movie celebrating Tim McVeigh. It'd be like an American film going, Tim McVeigh was a great man, and I will carry out his vision. I mean, that's what that would be like. It's just unfathomable to me that movie was, and I'm not knocking the movie, I love it, but it's unfathomable to me that the government let that movie come out.
And they did it so well, too. Yeah. It's such a stylish, just a beautiful film.
I mean...
Brings you in and grabs you.
That's the heroic climax of a film is a terrorist blowing up a government building. It's fantastic. And I don't care who hears me say that. That's fantastic.
Right.
As a film, as a movie, that's about as gripping as it gets.
Yeah, agreed.
So, agreed. I mean, yeah, in terms of pure film, you don't get any more dramatic.
So, given 2006 was such a crappy year for films, I'm looking forward to 07.
Well, let's take a break here. We'll come back. We'll talk about what's coming up in the year. We have Scott Daly from FilmFeverRadio.com. Back after this.
Don't go anywhere.
Now I'm getting emails about The Descent, and I'm not even reading them.
Just delete them.
Not even opening
them. Get rid of them.
You're going right to my trash. All right.
Yeah, and there are lots of pretty girls in it, too, so you'll be hopelessly distracted by that and not even see the creatures coming.
They're all sweaty and hot, too.
Okay. So it's like a whole lot of, like, cleavage. You're all going to die!
You couldn't even
respond. You shook your head.
No, I can't. Yeah.
All right. No, I
think we should stop talking about it.
Well, during the break, we were talking to James in the hallway, and we were all talking about horror movies, and now I'm feeling all freaked out about it.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to go home.
Today's a creepy day to watch a horror movie.
It's all dark and snowy.
Ooh.
Looks like the power's out. We're here with Scott Daly from FilmFeverRadio.com. I apologize. We're a little bit behind on time here, but I guess we'll be talking about it later in the year. Let's quickly talk about what's coming up in 07.
All right. Well, first of all, I think we discussed this earlier, Inland Empire, new David Lynch film.
Yes.
There are two trailers out there right now that I cannot stop watching.
300.
300 is one of them. And Grindhouse.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen the trailer for Grindhouse, my friend?
I have not.
It's a thing of beauty. Grindhouse is coming out. The series 300 is coming out. There's a little film I'm looking forward to called The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford.
Oh, yeah. I heard about that.
Brad Pitt and Casey Affleck. It looks really decent. So I'm looking forward to that one. Spider-Man 3 is coming out this summer. I'm the only one who thinks this, but I'm looking forward to Live Free or Die Hard.
Yeah. And on that note...
postman is the person in your neighborhood.
Kevin Smith's in that, you know.
I know, it's great.
You can tell that's going to suck because they're trying to get the geeks to see
it. Shut up.
No, that's when you know a movie's going to be bad. It's because, we'll put Kevin Smith in it. Then they'll come see it, and it'll work.
Die Hard.
Mailman Chris, hello, sir.
You'll be wrong.
Hey.
I'm just going to get on the floor now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you owe a few.
How many is he owed? Chris.
How many? Chris?
Well, you had seven going into today. You didn't get the story about being a douche and getting big girls, even because you're in a band.
All right, we're really short on time. How many?
Mm-hmm. One, two, three. So 10 push-ups total.
Let's give him two, because he did the Scott Staff story. All right, assume the position. One, two.
I hate you all.
Three. Four.
Girly push-up.
Five. Give him a break. Six, his head's all red.
Oh my
Seven.
God.
Two more, come up. Get those knees up. Eight, one more. Nine, yeah.
Oh, I hate you guys.
Oh.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, man.
You have pop a vein in your neck,
seriously,
there, my friend.
You're sweating. How can you be sweating?
Stop.
He's glistening.
I don't sweat, I glisten. I have to go powder my nose.
But, Rick, you did them well. I'm impressed.
Right. Thank you, Chris.
No problem. Hey, Scott, something to think about for next week. You did the best five.
Yeah.
I'd like to say 2006 was the year of the disappointing sequel.
I've got a whole list, and I'm ready to talk about that next week.
Next week, we'll do it.
Definitely.
Thank you, sir.
Talk to you Monday.
All right, real quickly, what's up at FilmFeverRadio.com?
This week, we return with more Tales from the Video Store. One of our most popular segments is Aaron and I were video store junkies in the past, and we also have a little bit of Indiana Jones news we like to go on a rant about, so...
Okay.
FilmFeverRadio.com will be up this in a few hours, actually. Be up ready to go. Another fantastic
Excellent.
Show.
We want to thank Scott Daly, FilmFeverRadio.com, Lisa Goddard, Jim Roop. Like us next, Donna Mike at 7. Timnasium tomorrow at 4. Fuel tomorrow at 9 a.m. Sarah Dillon, Tim Riley, Scotty J, Dave Zinn, all part of the big, wacky Rick Emerson family. We'll see you Monday at 11 a.m. As always, don't let the bastards run down. Thank you for listening. Be safe. See you all Monday. Bye now.
It is a moment for which we have waited over 200 years. A new direction.